يا هلا فويس، صوتك العربي.
Now you are listening to Talk of the Town, Talk of the Town with Ray Hanania. Talk of the Town brought to you by Life Run Medical Alert Systems.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Ray Hanania, and this is Talk of the Town Radio, the alternative voice to the biased anti-Arab mainstream American news media, the AAMANM. I like that acronym. They hate us when I say it. It's Friday, March 27th. Join the discussion today by calling 708-321-1313, extension 1. We want to hear your opinions. Our producer is Khalid Khilfa, and he'll get you on the air at 708-321-1313, extension 1. Talk of the Town is brought to you by Life Run Medical Alert Systems, the best emergency system for seniors and people in healthcare need available today. We're rebroadcast every Friday at 4 p.m. Chicago time on 1450 AM radio and online at yahalavoice.com, and we're rebroadcast online on Mondays at 11 a.m. Download our podcast from iTunes or from our news website at TheArabDailyNews.com. And don't forget to download our app for The Arab Daily News for Apple and Android devices. We're going to be talking about the Israeli elections. We also can talk about the Chicago elections. I got to be honest, I know the Arab community is supporting Chuy Garcia, but I'm having issues. The last two debates, I don't know. My response is a lot different than the enthusiasm that Chuy's supporters have for him. And as much as I'm upset about Mayor Rahm Emanuel, failure to support, the Arab American community, there are other issues at stake. And I know that, you know, I want to make it all about being, you know, how Mayor Emanuel supports Arab Americans or doesn't support Arab Americans. But there are other issues, like who's best for Chicago of the two choices. And for the life of me, I just can't support him. And by the way, I just want to make a little announcement here. Based on the reality of Yahala Voice listeners on 1450 AM and the radio station's plan to expand in the United States, we are going to be expanding. We decided to stay on 1450 AM from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. during the week and work on broadcasting on the FM frequency in Michigan in the near future. We appreciate your support and encourage you to listen to Yahala Voice at yahalavoice.com or our mobile apps on Android and iPhone. We will always be in the middle of the field of media to serve our community. Starting next week, Talk of the Town Radio will start at 3:30 in the afternoon online, and we'll continue to 4:30. And the first half, the whole show will be broadcast online, which is where most of the people listen to me anyway, at yahalavoice.com. But the last half will then be broadcast on 1450. I know it's a conspiracy, but I'm blaming it all on Rush Darwish. He's starting his own show, rushalavoice.com, I think, or something. So whatever it is, if there's a problem, blame it on Rush. That's my number one cardinal rule, okay? I know we're going to get my next guest on the line. We're reaching out to him now. Seth J. Franzman. He's the op-ed editor for the Jerusalem Post. And, Khalid, you're dialing his number? You got him out there? It is. He just texted me and said that he's good. Let me, tell him. I know this is goofy. Computers, technology. Let's see. Let's get Seth. Let me just type out the little note. Your phone is off. All right, we'll see what's happening there. Because I wanted to talk to Seth. I've known Seth a long time. He's the op-ed editor at the Jerusalem Post. And I want to ask him about the Israeli perspective on the elections and kind of get into it a little bit with him to find out, did Netanyahu really win? He did win the most number of seats. But is it really that big of a victory? Because it still comes down to, he took out 30 seats out of the 120 seats in the Knesset. But can he rule and can he put a coalition together? So I understand we do have Seth on the line. One of the things that I wanted to ask was, what's the impact of Netanyahu's win on the peace process? What about this flip-flop? Was it just an election stunt that critics called a racist, quote-unquote, appeal to anti-Arab sentiment, among Jewish voters in Israel, or was it something else? What's the Israeli perspective on the elections? And joining me to talk about this is Seth Frantzman from, he's in Jerusalem. He's originally from Maine, and like I said, he is the op-ed editor for the Jerusalem Post. By the way, his website is SethFrantzman.com, F-R-A-N-T-Z-M-A-N.com. Seth, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late by you in Jerusalem, but it's so nice to have you on the phone.
Yeah, thanks for giving me a call.
No, I love it. You're such a good guy. You know, we don't always agree, but you're so respectful, and I could learn a little bit from you sometimes. Because, you know, I let my emotions get carried away a little bit sometimes when I, with these issues. It's so hard. How do you manage to keep your head together and not get upset every day with everything that happens in the Middle East?
Well, look, I mean, it's a very tough situation. I think that we have to have a proper sense of anger and outrage. I mean,
right. It
doesn't mean that you should just say, well, okay, there's always some sort of excuse. But I think on the other side of the coin, we also need to always understand what is happening in Israel. Israel is not a monolith, right? I mean, I always notice in the international media, people say, well, Netanyahu won the election. Well,
right. It's
not actually accurate. Netanyahu got the same percentage of vote in Israel that the Liberal Democrats get in the United Kingdom, which is about 25% to 30% of the vote, right? So in any other country, he would not be a winner. But because of the way Israel's politics works, the fact that we have 25 little parties, he therefore becomes a winner by being the, what some people say is kind of the lesser of all these little evils, you
right.
know? And he comes out with that 30% of the vote, and therefore he's able then to form a coalition government of a whole series of different groups, each of which has its own little lobby, and each of which by itself you might not necessarily say, well, this is so bad. I mean, the fact is, okay, so you have a religious, you know, Orthodox Jewish party. But religious Orthodox Jews in Israel, most of them live inside the green line. So they have their own things that they want, which is that they want more funding for their education or more welfare for the family.
Well, that's interesting, Seth. Hey, Seth, let me interrupt you because that's interesting. That's an interesting point. And you'd have to be an Israeli, I think, to really recognize that the very religious Jewish citizens of Israel living in the Green Line, they're not in the settlements?
Well, I wouldn't say none of them are, but I would say 90% of them.
That's interesting.
Really black live inside. You have one or two settlements like Bitar Elite, which is actually right on the Green Line, but just on the other side,
right.
is a large religious city or town. And the same thing happens in Modi'in. There's a part of Modi'in that kind of goes over the Green Line. But they don't make up in any way the hardcore. And not only that, they don't. That's never been they've never had an interest in driving that policy. So even though you would associate with them with being obviously right-wing and religious, there's
right.
no denying that.
Right.
But these are people that, at the end of the day, are a little bit more like the American Amish, and no one would pretend that the American Amish and the evangelicals are the same.
Right.
American Amish people just want to get on with their lives, and their worldview is probably quite extreme and religious. Neither of us would probably want to live necessarily among a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
But you know, they have their needs.
You know, the sad part about Arab or Palestinian Israeli relations is we don't talk to each other enough, and we don't have these conversations because the natural question for me as a Palestinian is, wow, okay, if the majority of the religious Jews in Israel, they may be conservative, obviously they're very committed to their religion. Maybe they're not as hardcore when it comes to the issues, for example, then of the settlements, since the majority of them don't live in settlements. Is there if we were to bring the level of anger down between Palestinians and Israelis, where do you think the religious Israelis would fall in terms of issues of settlements?
We need to bifurcate that. This term religious, because I'm talking about this kind of ultra-Orthodox religious that all dress in mostly black.
Right.
But the other form, the, obviously the majority of the most ideological people that are what was referred to as settlers is people in Israeli society that tend to be referred to as national religious, or right. We say in Hebrew, dati liumi. They are the ones that wear the kind of knitted kippahs, and when you see sometimes these movies online or something, that right. They see these people throwing rocks at each other, you'll see this youth with the. So I think we have to understand that there's a break between those two streams.
So there are some religious, obviously, living in the settlements.
Oh, I mean, the ideology of the settler movement is primarily a kind of, it's a land of Israel, Eretz Israel religious movement, but it's quite different than what we would see with the ultra Orthodox. So I think, Israel has a party that basically represents much more of that kind of settler interest, which is the Naftali Bennett's, Beit Yehudi, Jewish Home
right.
Party. Now, not to be confused, by the way, with Avigdor Lieberman's Israel's Our Home Party, the Israel Beiteinu. So, and Lieberman's party draws a lot of its support not only from Russians, but interestingly from the Druze minority in Israel. Many of them vote for his party for other reasons.
Really?
So,
I mean, it's fascinating. And I was interested because, I've covered politics for 40 years in Chicago. So I always try to, I get emotional, obviously, about the issues. But when I step back from the issues, I have to look at the politics. Even like here in Chicago, we have an election. Rahm Emanuel's running for mayor. Jesus Garcia is a county commissioner. Former alderman is challenging him. Rahm hasn't been very pro-Arab. He's been very anti-Arab. But when I look at the election, even though he's been he's been distant from the Arab American community, I still think he's the better candidate when it comes to all of the issues, because I can understand the dynamics of what's happening in politics. In your opinion, and again, you're Israeli and Jewish, but do you think the Arab politicians, the voters, do you think they actually get involved in politics in a political sense, or is it more of an emotional sense of us versus them? I mean, how do you look at the Arabs who are engaged in the political process in Israel?
Well, let's say that the Israeli population consists of something like 1.5 million or more Arab citizens of Israel. And within that group, you have one section of them that is basically a Druze, which is sort of an Arab or non-Arab minority, which you also have in Lebanon, which has traditionally served in the Israeli army, which is about 150,000 people. And then you have also a Christian Arab minority, which is another 150,000 or so, 200,000. Now, but in general, the Christian and Muslim Arabs sort of vote similarly, whereas the Druze will tend to vote for more Zionist parties. But I think within the Arab minority, it's interesting. I think the tragedy of Israeli politics was that everything in Israel kind of breaks up along ethnic lines and
right.
religious lines. So just like I said, within the Jewish community, every Jew tends to kind of vote for his own flavor. Like, okay, so if I'm religious, I'm going to vote for a religious party. If I'm secular, I'll vote for a kind of secular center-left party that sort of reflects my values. Well, what happened with that, it meant that I think most of the Arabs in Israel felt that they never had a place within these Jewish parties. And not only that, these Jewish parties didn't make them feel welcome. A lot of people abroad tend to think that the center-left in Israel is somehow pro-Arab or more open-minded, and it's similar to the American Democrats, but it's just not accurate. The center Zionist left is basically a Jewish party which supports basically Jewish rights, and it just wants Israel to be a little bit smaller so that there will be a higher percentage of Jews within that line.
So their view against working or, taking over the West Bank or, absorbing the West Bank is they don't want to do it because they see this non-Jewish population diluting the population in Israel.
That's what they always say.
So in other words,
they've always said we don't want as many of them. It doesn't come from a standpoint of liberalism. Right? I mean, that's the irony of it.
Those are nuances that I think are important to understand when you try to, appeal to a voting public. I think Seth, I have to take a quick break for like about 3 minutes, and I know we're imposing on your time because it is very late.
No, it's not a problem. Not a problem.
Okay, great. We're going to take
We're
going to take a quick break here for our advertisers, and when we come back with my guest, Seth Frantzman, he is the op-ed editor of the Jerusalem Post. I was proud to write there. I know I took a lot of grief from a lot of Arabs, you know, for writing there. I don't always agree with everything, but you know something? If when we mix it up and we talk to each other, I always believe that we might be able to find answers to things. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Seth about what I think is the real story, that the Arabs did so much better than what people expected. And it was interesting how that came about. I'm Ray Hanania. This is Talk of the Town Radio here at 1450 AM Radio in Chicago and live online at yahalavoice.com. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Raise your voice with Yahala Voice.
Home Life Furniture. آخر صيحات الأثاث وكل ما تحتاج من مفروشات. Home Life Furniture. الأمانة، الأخوة، والدقة في المواعيد.
No credit needed to finance. Everyone is approved at Home Life Furniture, 13449 South Cicero Avenue in Crestwood, Illinois, 708-631-3627. Mention Yahala Voice and your delivery is free. Get $200 off when you spend $1,500.
Do you have a medical alert device? When you press the button for help, can you talk through your pendant? With many companies, you still have to talk through the base unit, and that's not much help in an emergency. The answer, LifeRun Medical Alert Systems. Simply press the button and talk to a live operator right through the pendant. If your device can't do that, upgrade to LifeRun today. The system is free, the shipping is free, and the monitoring fee is less than a dollar a day. Call LifeRun now at 1-800-421-3366 or order online at LifeRun.com.
And Carrie Chrysler Jeep Dodge's 72-hour sale starts now. $30 million in inventory, $5 million in discounts, and $25 million to lend will be available for this public sale at Man Carrie's Chrysler Jeep Dodge at Oak Lawn. Now through Monday, get $12,000 off MSRP. Get 0% for 72 months, plus a $4,500 rebate. 800 factory cars are on display. Brand new Jeep Cherokees, Grand Cherokees, minivans, Ram trucks, and more. $5 million in discounts will be made available on Man Carrie's $30 million of new car inventory. Stop what you're doing right now and get to Man Carries at Oak Lawn. $12,000 off MSRP. 0% for 72 months, plus $4,500 in rebates. $30 million in inventory. And bank reps on site with $25 million to lend. You will drive today. Hurry. This public sale will absolutely end Monday. Sale hours extended till midnight at Man Carry Chrysler Jeep Dodge on 95th Street, Oak Lawn.
On select models, $1,389 per thousand with zero down, with approved credit plus tax, title, license, and doc fee.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Rush, here to tell you about the best talk show on the planet. It's called Rise Up. If you're looking for a show that talks about all the issues that matter to you, then you need to listen to Rise Up. From the latest stories happening back home in Palestine, the Middle East, and of course, all the stories happening in our own backyard in Chicago, and of course, across the nation. That is what Rise Up is all about. Plus, Rise Up is a program that wants to hear from you. Call the show, 708-321-1313, extension 1. Oh, by the way, I also do this show with this guy named Bob. We call him the Great American. The guy thinks he's an expert when it comes to Arab-related news. Actually, he's not so bad. So listen to Rise Up every Wednesday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. Central Time on Chicago's 1450 a.m. and YahalaVoice.com.
I'm Tisma Yahala Voice in Chicago.
And welcome back to Talk of the Town Radio. I'm the host, Ray Hanania, here at 1450 AM live radio in Chicago and online live at yahalavoice.com. You can hear us every Friday. Beginning next Friday, we're going to start 30 minutes early at 3:30. So you want to listen then at 3:30 starting next Friday. Right now I'm on the line with a good friend of mine and the op-ed editor of the Jerusalem Post, where I've written in the past, Seth Frantzman. And Seth and I were talking about the Israeli election that took place about week and a half ago. One of the issues that I was bringing up with you, Seth, was it seemed like this was a victory for the Arab vote also, in the sense that more Arabs came out to vote they came together. I don't know if they were united in principle, but they were united in principle, but maybe not on all the issues. But they referred to themselves as a joint list to avoid the word unity. What did you make of the Arab vote, and what do Israelis make, Jewish Israelis make of the Arab vote?
Well, I think this is the really big story of this election that a lot of people are not really focusing on. I spent election night here in Nazareth with the Joint Arab List, and the Joint Arab List is a kind of fascinating party that was basically the three small Arab parties were forced to come together because the percentage needed to get into the Knesset was raised in these elections. So they were polling at 3% or so of the overall vote. And they all had to basically come together. And that meant that they combined. One of the parties was basically a communist party that included Arabs and Jews, where the party that is basically an Arab nationalist party, which is the one that has Hanin Zouabi and Jamal Zahalka, which is called Balad, and an Islamist party called Ta'al, which is the kind of Islamic movement in Israel, so similar to sort of the Muslim Brotherhood or something. So it's kind of an irony. You have basically the extreme left sitting with the extreme right, but the one thing they all have in common is that these are the parties that traditionally got the Arab supported the Arab populace in Israel and have Arab members, and they got 13 seats out of 120 in the Knesset, which is obviously much less than the 20% of the population, which they are, but they had a much higher voter turnout, around 70%. Than they have in the past, because it tended to be that the Arab voter turnout was declining every year because many Arabs felt disillusioned and they felt like, look, we're citizens of Israel, but this country doesn't represent us, and in some cases doesn't even recognize, you know, some basic civil rights, so why should we vote? So it was fascinating to see how this party did, and I think the leader of the party, Ayman Odeh, who comes from the kind of communist part of it, I think he's really a phenomenal person. He's actually today doing a four-day march on behalf of Bedouin rights, and he's going to end up on Sunday in front of the Knesset. And I'm going to be joining them, I think, tomorrow morning at 7 in the morning. But he's been walking 30 kilometers a day. And you have to ask yourself, where is all the media to cover that?
Right.
Why is the Israeli media have such a blind spot? And you know what? The real question I ask is, why does the part of the Israeli media that is considered, quote-unquote, on the left, which... where are they in all this story? And I think the real big secret is that the Israeli Jewish left is truly very much afraid of having a real, authentic Arab voice in the Knesset. I think for many years, some of them got used to the fact that, quote unquote, we know what's best for the Arabs. And I think having a kind of a strong Arab representation will be very good in this Knesset, but it's interesting to see what happens with it.
Do you think the left in Israel fears the Arab vote, and maybe that's too strong, differently from the way the right looks at the Arab vote? In other words, the left wants two states because they really want a separation. And the right, I think, doesn't want two states, at least if you believe Netanyahu. And I think... And I'll ask you about this in a minute, but when he said he really didn't want a Palestinian state, I think the true Netanyahu came out. At least that's what I've always believed, but I'd be interested in your perspective. But from the right, it seems like they don't want two states because they really see an opportunity to annex a lot more land in the West Bank. You think that's an accurate, description of the two sides when they look at the Arabs and the peace process?
Look, I've always made a joke about the difference between the Israeli left and right, and always said that the difference is that the left doesn't want Arabs and that the right doesn't want Arabs voting.
Right.
The right has never minded having a huge number of Arabs under Israeli control.
As long as they don't
vote. The basic idea is, look, we have millions of them, but that's fine. They'll live under some sort of civil or military administration. Although I think the true irony is interesting. If you look at the origins of the Israeli right, Vladimir Jabotinsky and Menachem Begin, and you go back to the 50s, it's interesting that it was Menachem Begin who called on the government to end all the curfews and the discriminations and civil rights discriminations against Arabs, because he felt that as citizens they should be judged one at a time, but he had felt, in, you know, before as a group of Arabs, that they obviously, in a sense, threaten the concept of a Jewish state, because where are they going to be in that state? Obviously, they're going to feel that they are that their civil rights are somehow violated by the very nature of it. I mean, it's like, how can you be a Jewish citizen in the old days in Ireland when Ireland was basically officially a Catholic state? Well, I don't see how you can even be a Protestant in a situation right. like that. It's very difficult. So I think that it's very interesting to understand. When we look at it today, I think you're right in a sense. Probably Netanyahu, I don't know if it's that I think he does basically oppose a Palestinian state, and I think that even if he doesn't, he has no concept in terms of how do you get out of this, how do you disentangle what is happening in the West Bank. But I think in general, when you look at Israeli politics, you don't have a future vision anywhere across the board for what will Israel look like in 20 years, which is why you see very few people in Israel talking about solutions. You see basically a lot of rancor and anger in Israeli politics. You see a lot of racism, and I don't mean just racism against Arabs. There's been a huge amount of racism outpouring against what is called like Mizrahi Jews, or Jews right. that come from the Middle East. Israel is just a super divided society, and there is not a lot of voices that say, wait a sec, you know, we have to have a shared society, and we have to find some sort of a future in which Israel doesn't end up looking like Lebanon or looking like Yugoslavia. Yeah, which obviously you think, well, no one wants that.
Yeah, the post-2001 world, I think, is much more polarized every place. You know, there's more distinct lines, whereas before, you could be for example, in Chicago, you could be a conservative Democrat. We used to call that Reagan Democrats. Democrats who supported the Republican president, Ronald Reagan. They were a huge group of voters in the Chicago area. And today, I think now you see people moving away from each other, the right and the left, and the center is like a big empty void. There's just a small group of people, and it seems like Israel is going the same way as everybody else. Do you get that sense that it's more polarized in Israel today than it was? Or are we really just getting to the hardcore root issues that maybe we didn't really touch on earlier when we were hoping for peace in the past?
Well, look, I think at the end of the day, I mean, Israeli society has a lot, there are a lot of interesting, fascinating commonalities. I mean, people are tremendously helpful to each other on the street. Israel is one of the few countries, I guess, I mean, Israel defines itself as a Western country. It's one of the few countries where people can still hitch a ride. You can still hitchhike in this country. And anyone can do that. It's not Arabs or Jews. I mean, people still hitchhike. And that's something that's very interesting to see. There is a society here that has a very low crime rate, and there are very few murders in Israel. There is a lot of a shared society. When you see people come out during the holidays, you do see a shared society. But when you look in the media and when you look at elections and things, you see a very balkanized society where basically everyone lives in a neighborhood that sort of looks like them. And it's not just that they live in neighborhoods. In most of the small communities outside the cities in Israel, you can't just move to a village or a little area. Like, you have to apply to live there. And there's an acceptance committee.
Really?
And look at the fact, yeah, I mean, I think 90%.
Critics would say that's racist in a way, that, you know, you have to be accepted.
It's obviously racist. I mean, how is it that 90% or 99% of the communities outside of the cities in Israel are basically segregated? Either they are completely Arab villages, or they are completely Jewish, like a moshav or a kibbutz or whatever. I mean, it's total madness, and it goes down right to the street level. The schools in Israel are also the same. Only 0.001% of the schools have Arabs and Jews studying together. I mean, that is totally accepted in Israel, and in very few other societies is it accepted that, well, of course all these people have to go to separate schools.
Seth, are there other Israelis like you who are in the middle who recognize these issues, or are you kind of like the odd man out over there? Because, you know what, when I listen to you, I can see common ground, and then we can discuss, when you see common ground, you can discuss issues without getting mad. You know, obviously people don't like racism, but when I hear an Israeli acknowledge, yeah, there's racism here, then it kind of brings down the anger level to say, wow, here's an Israeli that kind of agrees with me. Maybe I don't have to be so strident when I'm criticizing them, because here's a person I can talk with. How unusual. I mean, do you look at yourself and say you're in the stream of what happens in Israel, but do you feel like you're part of it, or do you kind of feel like you're on the outside sometimes?
Well, I lived in Israel 10 years, and I would say that when I first came here, I didn't come here with a lot of illusions. I accepted this is a country that's different than America, and that's just the way it is. But I think after 10 years, you know, you start to ask questions, and initially you're sold on things in Israel. They say, well, the kibbutz, you know, it's a beautiful egalitarian utopia. And then you start to look beneath the surface and you say, well, wait a second, there's nothing egalitarian about it. I mean, you have a small closed community which is only for people like you. And if that's the way it had been in America, then people like my ancestors, like Jews, they could never have moved to a small town in Maine because it would be Christian only. So I think to myself, well, that's not acceptable. So when you know you start to question things, I wouldn't say there's no one like me. I think there's a lot of people that have different types of questions like I do. I think that there are not a lot of people who maybe have the exact same set of issues that I have. But look, Israel's an incredibly diverse society, and you find all sorts.
Well, I've always felt that you were always somebody that I could communicate with. We can have discussions, and I always felt it was also very, positive. I it's interesting to talk with you because I can learn things. We're not arguing because, believe me, there are other reporters, who I've just gotten into battles with, and it's like, oh my gosh, we can't even get past the anger between the two sides to talk about the issues that we're even discussing right now. Let me ask you to move, because we only got about 15 minutes left or a little bit less, but the election and Netanyahu, do you expect him to form the next coalition, and will he be the prime minister, or is there still a question mark? The numbers don't look good for the opposition, but, you know, you never know how things, fall. What do you think will happen?
There's almost no doubt that Netanyahu will form the next coalition.
Okay.
I mean, I think the 90% chance. The problem is he's going to have to give away about half the ministries to all these little parties because he has to bribe them to stay with him.
Right.
So it means selling off foreign ministry and interior ministry, like a little bit like an auction. So
yeah.
You get rid of all these ministries. And then what's left for Likud? I mean, the whole irony of it, here Likud wins the election, and then they don't get to have much at the table. But you have to understand, people don't understand Netanyahu abroad. I mean, there's a lot of rancor in America about, like, well, he spoke to Congress, and he's such a right-winger, he's an extremist. No, they don't understand who Netanyahu is. Netanyahu, one of his greatest heroes, is the Carthaginian general Hannibal, who fought Rome. Netanyahu is an admirer of a general who basically was fighting for a very small country against the largest empire of the day, and in the end basically didn't win, but he fought a very successful campaign for many years. I think Netanyahu has to be understood as sort of a kind of Nixonian type of character or an extremely good poker player.
So
he's really extremely a great politician in the way LBJ was. He understands coalitions. He understands give and take. Sorry, did I cut you off?
No, go ahead.
He understands how to play poker, and it's like if you've ever gone and played poker and you play Hold'em or something, and there's always a player that plays super conservative and kind of seems like he could play forever, and everyone else gets tired eventually. He might not win the game, but he always seems to have enough chips. He always seems to break even, and I think that's kind of what Netanyahu always fights for every single day. He doesn't fight for the next 10 years. He fights for, can I win next week? And when he looks at Barack Obama, he says, can I outplay Barack Obama for the next 2 years? He looks and he understands how politics works. He understands how terms work. And it's never about the long term. It's about, can I keep this country afloat? And he truly looks in the mirror and believes that he is, in a way, saving Israel from all sorts of issues that threaten it, whether or not it's the Palestinians or Hamas or Iran or also, maybe American or EU-sanctioned type things or the UN. And his view is, I have to fight tooth and nail every day to keep this country afloat, and I don't care if some liberal American Jews hate me. I really it doesn't matter to me. And I'll tell you the truth. When I spoke to a lot of Palestinians who I know, especially in East Jerusalem and in the West Bank, when I ask them about Netanyahu, a lot of them tell me, obviously off the record, but we know Netanyahu. We've lived under him for years, and he's not crazy like Ehud Olmert or some of these guys that is going to launch some massive war or some huge crackdown. We know that he's basically conservative at heart, and like our lives are not going to change that much. They're not going to get much better, but they're certainly not going to get worse. And I think if many people think back, they remember that it was Shimon Peres who bombed Cana, right? I mean, the left in Israel sometimes engages in strange military adventures that the right doesn't.
That's fascinating because a similar, maybe one way to understand Netanyahu as you present him, and I don't know if you're familiar with Chicago politics, but when Harold Washington, the first African-American, was elected mayor of Chicago, Edward Doleac, who was the leader of the anti-Washington coalition, used race as an election strategy to try and stop Harold Washington. Edward Doleac wasn't a racist, but he saw race as an opportunity to checkmate and put Harold Washington's power in check. And he did that for almost 5 years. Are you kind of saying that if Netanyahu used race, he didn't use it because he's a racist, he used it because it was a way to achieve his goal of voting?
Yeah.
It was, in other words, it was more about the election rather than racism.
Yeah, but you know, it's almost just as bad. I mean, which...
No, I know, but it is still a subtle difference.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Which politician do you prefer? The politician who you know is a racist, but at least he's honest?
Right.
Or the politician that says, you know what, this election I'll use racism, and next election I'll lie to you about the economics.
Right.
I mean, I think it's a kind of irony. I, you know, in some ways, I almost prefer the guy that, you know, he wears it on his sleeve. Like, okay, fine, he's crazy, but whatever, he's my kind of crazy. I mean, I think, you know, I think this is the weirdness about Netanyahu. His whole flip-flop on the Palestinian issue is the same. I mean, and that leaves you a little bit worried. You're like, well, this guy will do almost anything. So that's why I say it's like Richard Nixon. You know, Richard Nixon in all his tapes, he was a little bit of a loon and a little bit racist and anti-Semitic. But the fact of the day is that Richard Nixon had a lot of Jews that worked with him. I mean, he was kind of a strange, complex character. So I think that, yeah, in some ways I think we do have to understand Netanyahu that way. I think these bigoted comments before the election, yeah, it was probably somehow calculated.
Was he scared, do you think, on election day? Was he really worried that he might lose, you know, early during the day? And because as a, you know, if I were looking at to analyze it strictly on a political basis, not as an Arab or Israeli, I would think that, wow, the early polls that day were probably showing that not enough of his supporters were coming out, that the Zionist Union might beat him, and he needed to do something to get them to the poll. And standing up and saying that he could not support a Palestinian state obviously was a fuse that certainly would motivate a lot of people to come out, or pointing a finger at the Arabs saying, look at them vote, we got to stop them. Those would be viewed as racist, but at the same time, they were politics at its highest and, you know, purest form. It's not always good, but it's strictly politics.
Well, when we were driving up to the north to Nazareth on election day, I remember looking at my two friends and colleagues in my car, and everyone was saying, well, it looks like, you know, Zionist Union, the center-left, is going to win. And I said, you know what, I had already written an editorial for the next day that, you know, written it as if the Zionist Union had won, but I had told the editor-in-chief, there's a paragraph in there that you're going to have to switch, and you're going to have to say that Likud might win this one.
Right.
And I said to my friends, I said, you know, this is going to be a Dewey beats Truman type of moment.
Right.
We're going to wake up in the morning and we're going to
find out it's completely
and
different, right?
I think that if you read the reports, I don't know, I wasn't super close to the Netanyahu campaign at all, but I understood that basically a large number of people, Jews that live in the West Bank, like what you say, settlers, that they basically came in droves, and instead of voting for Beit Yehudi, which tends to be their party, they decided, you know what, we need to keep Likud in power, we need a strong Likud. And some of his base and some of the poor towns came out. But I think that he understood the polls were wrong. I think the pollsters, I read an article in the Roll Call, or one of those American journals, that said basically Israeli pollsters are lazy, and the polls basically were wrong. And they didn't poll poor neighborhoods. They didn't poll the right people. And look, you ask a bunch of, you know, rich leftists in the coffee shops in Tel Aviv, what do you think? And they all say Zionist Union. And then it's not a surprise that the joint list or which is, you know, the Arabs or the right wing will come home with a larger victory than was expected because you're not even bothering to ask the people that vote for them, maybe. I don't know. It was a fascinating election.
Is Netanyahu concerned about the deteriorating relations with President Obama? Because it looks like this has given Obama the other change that I think is going to be dramatic is, you know, Obama is a lame duck president now. He has a year and a half to do whatever he wants to do. And now he has the excuse, you know, to kind of crack down on Netanyahu and Israel. And not in the sense that he's going to be anti-Israel, but in the sense that he might not veto every resolution anymore at the UN. He might, you know, they just released that, they declassified the, State Department report on Israel's nuclear weapons. It was like 390 pages. I mean, these are things that never would have happened, you know, in prior, at least recent prior administrations, but could cause a lot of discomfort for the politics in Israel. Does that have an, stand to have an impact on the elections and where Israel is going to go in the next few years?
Well, I think we need to remember that, there's no such thing as a deterioration in Israeli-American relations. I think that, first of all, the Obama administration never liked Netanyahu, and it was always a very difficult relationship between the two. It's a they personally dislike each other. The U.S. security relationship has not changed. It's basically as perfect as it ever was. I think the State Department has always been critical of Israel, and it still is. So what we're seeing is that it looks like there's a deterioration on the surface, but it's primarily a surface issue. Now, you know, what you say is what we always hear in the media. Well, one day the Americans are going to withdraw that Security Council veto. But I think it's like something, you know, the food you order at the restaurant that never comes. I mean, it just, we keep hearing this.
Right.
When Obama was elected for the second term, we heard the same narrative. Oh, well, you know, he's a lame duck. Now he's going to put the screws to
right.
Israel. Finally, you know.
And he didn't
finally
do it.
The real Obama will emerge, you know.
Yeah.
And from the Israeli right, you know, the real Obama is basically like a Muslim. But from the left-wing perspective, it's the real Obama studied with Rashid Khalidi, and he's a very big liberal, and he's very cerebral. It doesn't matter how you view Obama. The fact is that the real Obama will never emerge. It will maybe emerge like Jimmy Carter emerged after he was president.
Right.
And then Obama will tell us that, like, he really didn't like Israel. And you'll be like, yeah, well, okay, but you're not in power. So I really think I could be totally wrong. And next week we're going to see at the Security Council that the U.S. is supporting a Palestinian statehood bid. But I think the fact is our diplomacy, the State Department, works so slowly in America that when a new administration will come along, they all have to start the peace process all over again. And I always compare the U.S.-American relationship in each administration to kind of, what do they call it, the seven steps of grieving.
Right.
You know, you go through these seven steps, and every administration does this. When George Bush was about to leave office, there was a story that, you know, Condoleezza Rice is outraged with Israel. She hates Israel. It doesn't matter. He was about to leave office, and he left office, and nothing
right.
changed. And that administration was really sick and tired also of all the antics in the peace process. And I think we're going to see the same thing again. The peace process someone will write an obituary for it again. It will keep moving on. The American relationship will keep moving on. And I don't know. But
all right.
I don't know, but we'll see.
Seth Franzen, my guest. Seth, I want to tell you how much I enjoyed this conversation. I thought it was frank. It was upfront. It was honest. You know, there are a lot of Arabs that are going to be mad at me. Why are you talking to the quote-unquote Zionist? Everybody that's an Israeli is a Zionist. To some of them, there are obviously extremists in the Arab community. But I'll tell you, Seth, there are a lot of moderates in the Arab community. They may not scream as loud as the extremists, but they are in the mass majority. So I know that this has been fascinating for them, too. It's a real pleasure, and I look forward to doing this again sometime, Seth. I really enjoyed it. I know how late it is for you out there in Jerusalem. You take it easy. Keep my land warm, okay? Watch it. Spear Kilo, all right?
Thanks
I got 8.5
right.
acres. Yeah, that's my producer, Khaled. He said, take care of it until I come back, okay? All right, Seth Franzen,
no
my
we'll
guest.
Bye, Ray.
All right, my editor of the Jerusalem Post, a great guy. Seth, we appreciate it. Bye-bye. That was Seth Franzen. Listen, we only got a couple minutes left, but I want to put in a plug for somebody who I think that we should all know about, Sonia Khalil. Sonia Khalil lives in Palos Hills. She is running for alderman of the 3rd Ward. Her number is 42. Sonia Cares is her motto. You want to give her the support if you are in Palos Hills. You want to support her. She's a young half Palestinian, half Italian, I think. But she cares about Palos Hills. She's a great person. I had a chance to meet with her, talk to her and her father. I think Sonia has a great opportunity on Election Day on Tuesday to possibly win and give us our first prominent Arab American in the southwest suburbs, which has the largest concentration of Arabs, Khalid. You know that? We can't elect anybody of significance. She could be one of the first significantly elected American Arabs to office. That's punch. We are scared of the Mukhabarat. So Sonia Khalil on Tuesday, which is Election Day. And I know, listen, a lot of Arabs are going to get mad at me, too, over this. I figure I'm going to do everything in one show. You know, Khalid, I'm going to do a Jerusalem Post reporter and Israeli and announce that I just can't support Jesus Garcia. I can't do it. As much as I'm mad at Rahm Emanuel for shutting and abolishing the Arab Advisory Commission and undermining the Arabesque Festival, when I look at the bigger picture of Chicago, I think that in spite of all of those issues with Rahm Emanuel, I can't abandon him in favor of Jesus Garcia. I know Jesus Garcia. He's a good person. He's just not strong enough to win and lead the city of Chicago. I'm worried about what type of mayor he's going to be. I look at the people, some of the political people around him, and I worry about them because, you know, Harold Washington was a good person, but I don't think that Jesus Garcia represents the Harold Washington Coalition. But that's just my opinion. That's all. It's just mine. But, hey, what do I know? I only covered Chicago politics for 40 years. All right, listen, I want to thank you. Remember, next week we will be here at 3:30. If you want to listen to my insane rants and raves, 3:30 here at YahalaVoice.com radio. Remember, beginning next week, we'll only be on radio at 1450 a.m. from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. during the week. My show will run from 3:30 to 4:30, followed by another show that will run from 4:30 till 5:30. Only that 4 to 5 o'clock segment will actually be on 1450 AM radio. The bottom line is just tune in online at YahalaVoice.com, 3:30. You'll hear the whole show. That's all you need to know. And if you're confused, blame it on Rush Darwish, okay? It's his fault. It's Rush's fault. And the Tundra, it's his fault too. Khalid, thank you for helping us with all our telephone needs and everything, and getting Seth on the line for us, and blame Khalid for putting Seth on because I had nothing to do with it. All right, listen, have a great week, everybody. I'll talk to you next Friday at 3:30. Take it easy. Bye bye.
Yahala Voice, connecting the Arab voice globally.